Brady and Walker. Watch it on Sportsnet 360. Hear it on sportsnet.ca/590 and Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Ah, yes, Brady and Walker, April the 2-3. Lovely day outside in Toronto. There was snow on the roofs. Roofs.
Get to your comment.
No, I won't. I want to talk about the weather. Hard to call them happy days. A sitcom I grew up with back was really popular when Andrew's grandparents were kids. But they're happier days at the Rogers Center. Blue Jays are 4-1 against the Orioles this year, going for the sweep tonight. Two impressive things about that. They were 8-11 against the Orioles last year. It felt like they were worse, didn't it? And they didn't sweep a home 3- or 4-game series till the end of May. Remember when the A's came in? Oh, the Oakland A's, look out. Oh, Moneyball, Billy Beane working out in between games. Lats and delts. Well, they swept the A's. No problem. But no one's sweating any position players' OPS with the Blue Jays. I know. They're barely 500. And it's okay to think they'll need to add a starter to the rotation before the trade deadline. I do believe that. And this isn't a quick start opinion. I believe to the second I heard about Marcus Stroman's injury that they would need another pitcher at some point in time. And I don't know if Stroman was going to be very good this year or stunningly great. But it was probably going to be one or the other. The AL East is lumped tightly together. But I've seen enough. Last year, none of the five teams could have been counted out, even at the end of April. Five teams were within 4.5 games at the end of April last year. Right now, you got all five teams within 2 games of each other. But let's be honest. The Yanks and the Rays could have been playoff teams last year. They cannot this year. Players aren't as good. It's just that simple. There's no more David Price and Will Myers in Tampa. And old bodies, the same bodies, are a year older in New York. The only reason the Yankees are slightly better in one aspect, they have Alex Rodriguez, and they don't have Derek Jeter. That actually makes them better. But it's a three-horse race. Jays, Red Sox, and the team they're trying to sweep tonight. And the Jays are going to be one of those three horses. I know that much, but we're all still learning about what else we know.
This is Brady and Walker. Online at sportsnet.ca/590. On TV at Sportsnet 360. And on your radio at Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Got something to say? Say it on Twitter at Brady and Walker. Or text 590-590. Now here are Greg Brady and Andrew Walker.
Yeah, welcome to the show. It is Brady and Walker, Thursday, April the 23rd. I'm Andrew Walker. He is Greg Brady. Welcome to the 1 o'clock hour. Glad you found us. Interesting. When you look at the Blue Jays, 4-2 win last night, so they're going for the sweep tonight at the Rogers Center. It'll be Drew Hutchison on the mound looking to rebound from a couple of subpar starts. By the way, get in touch with us at Brady and Walker on Twitter, at BradyFan590 or at Fan590Walker, and our email always open, including for tomorrow's Friday Brady and Walker mailbag. Brady and Walker at sportsnet590.ca. Yeah, we are still learning about this team. Something we're going to talk about going on in the show as well. At 2, I do want to talk about Devin Travis a little bit. Gets back in the lineup, has a monster game, including the game-winning home run, as they made a winner out of Aaron Sanchez last night and a loser out of Ubaldo Jimenez in 3 innings in. I'm not sure it looked like that was the end result.
Aaron Sanchez was reminding folks of Ricky Romero, middle of 2012, a little bit with the control issues and not being quite sure where it was going.
What a weird line! Like he was walking guys, but he wasn't giving up any hits and would get a couple of big double plays when he needed them.
Big 1-2-3 inning in the third, yeah. Settled him a little bit, and that got, yeah, again, it gave an opportunity for the bats to swing back into motion, but the bullpen has been a very bright spot. And from Osuna to Cecil to Castro again last night, really squeaky clean performance. And the more guys you pitch, the more random it is that somebody's going to be not having their best stuff, not having the best of days. And it's such a small period of time. These guys aren't throwing 90 pitches. They're coming in and sometimes throwing 15 or 16. And you can get beat up pretty bad pretty quickly if you don't have it. And their bullpen had it last night.
We're going to have Kevin Barker in studio in about 10, 12 minutes from now.
I was in a really good mood. And
Yeah, we're really scraping the barrel here. Right. Last time he was in studio, though, was after Aaron Sanchez had a struggling start his second time out. So it kind of begs the question, as we reset Aaron Sanchez a little bit, like the way he rebounded there in the third and fourth innings, despite the walks, I think Sanchez is going to get another go at this. I don't think there's a quick hook to pull him from the rotation.
And there's not an undeniable guy that's waiting in Buffalo, and there's not an undeniable guy that's coming off a deal like Jay Happ was. I know Jay Happ and undeniable don't often go in the same sense, but he was ready to pitch last year to take Dustin McGowan out when McGowan started getting inconsistent.
Well, two things here. Randy Wolf is 3-0, three good starts for Buffalo right now. Read into that what you will. I don't know what that means. And Marco, well, honestly.
No, but you're right. If he's 0-3 and has an 11 ERA, it's not a consideration. They're more likely to consider it than not.
And the other guy is Marco Estrada. I think you can confidently say at some point this season, Marco Estrada is going to start some ball games for the Toronto Blue Jays. I don't know for who. I don't know when. I don't know if it's a spot start or if it's going to be a spot in the rotation like a Villanueva or like a Jay Happ. The thing with Aaron Sanchez is, and he was, great velocity, fantastic stuff last night, but was all over the zone. At times, effectively wild, because the hitter didn't know where it was going, but seven walks is insane. The first guy to walk seven hitters and still win a ball game in like 20 years on this team.
Yeah.
So the question is, do you think that Aaron Sanchez, you're not sending him to AAA, but can he help the bullpen enough that John Gibbons doesn't mind having a quick change over here?
Yeah, in short spurts.
Because don't forget, if Aaron Sanchez were to go to the bullpen, he's throwing two pitches, not four, right?
Yeah, he doesn't. Yeah, he doesn't need it. He's throwing his fastball.
He's throwing his fastball and his curveball.
And a curve. Yeah, it's a simple 1-2 punch. I don't think they're even considering it yet. Regardless of Randy Wolf is, and there's going to be enough transition of guys up, guys down. We find out this morning Deonner Navarro is going to go on the DL. Jose Bautista may still go on the disabled list after he strained his right shoulder with quote unquote the throw from Monday night's game with all the shenanigans with the Orioles. So Josh Tolley's coming up. Doesn't really affect what you're going to do with pitchers, because ideally, you're rolling with five guys and seven. You've got your five starters, your seven guys in the bullpen. I don't look at the scenario and think Sanchez is it a setback for him to pitch some bullpen innings? I'm not so sure whether it is or not. Remember where we were last year to some extent with Marcus Stroman, right? Bullpen innings, right? And then we saw him later on in the year, and nobody thought it was we've overestimated what Marcus Stroman can be. A lot of times you like to let guys find their groove that way.
Marcus Stroman came up in, I want to say, late May.
It was when they were winning.
Had a few outings as a relief pitcher and kind of got knocked around a little bit. In fact, he got knocked around a lot. And then the second they put him in the rotation, where it was his game to own, he was unbelievable. And continued to be unbelievable for the rest of the year. He was their best guy.
Yeah.
He was probably going to be the opening day guy this year.
May 4th was the first start, but he had six relief starts in May.
Okay, so so it was he earlier than I thought.
Yeah.
So with Sanchez, the difference is here. Like, I'm not worried about Aaron Sanchez. The fastball command is something that, listen, Nolan Ryan struggled with fastball command at different points of his career. No one can hit Aaron Sanchez yet. Like, they're not hitting him. Even last night, he gave up two base hits, and one of them was a hard opposite field home run to make it 2-0. The walks are something that it's not like he's throwing 91 and you're worried, like, what's the matter with his velocity? Clay Buchholz, had a couple outings last year where he get knocked around. Next thing you know, he's on the DL.
I'd love to see just a more settled rotation. You remember what 13 was like? Very strange with your Ramon Ortiz's starts and your Chien Mien Wong starts, and obviously Esmail Rogers may have been their best pitcher for about the span of a month in June in from about mid June to mid July he was. So last year, here's what you got from your starters: 34 from Dickey, 32 from Burley, 32 from Hutchison, 26 from Happ. Once he was in, he stayed in. 20 from Stroman, which you documented, because once he started, he was one of their best guys. 8 from McGowan early season, 6 from Moore early season, and three emergency starts from Liam Hendricks.
That's almost the list. When you're talking about a 162 game season, that's almost zero turnover.
Yes,
like it's almost zero.
But now there's no Happ, there's no McGowan, there's no Morrow. Again, there's always good reasons for that. But so there's 40 starts from last year that have been eaten up. Stroman's another 20. You've got to add 60 starts among Sanchez and Norris. And that's it right now. You've added Sanchez and Norris to Dickey, Burley, Hutchison. And I just don't look at another guy like Redmond, like Hendricks
Redmond's gone. Redmond's not in the plans anymore.
No, but he can always come back. That's the thing. You can DFA a guy and then he's back. But the strangest part of it is, the Randy Wolf thing might be interesting to watch, but it's just not. I mean, they flirted that 13-year with whether Jamie Moyer was going to pitch games, and he was like 49. I mean, they had him up as high as AAA.
It was a disaster. My thing is with Sanchez, to me, it's not about development. Like, it's about winning, right? It doesn't mean you're trading young talent, but John Gibbons and Alex Anthopoulos, like, they want to put Aaron Sanchez in a position that's going to help the team, right?
Yeah.
So at this point, I mean, if he's walking seven guys starting, you're not going to win many of those games.
Well, next two starts for him will be on the road. He'll start the series opener at Fenway on Monday after they're done in Tampa, and then he's probably going to get a start in Cleveland on the weekend, likely on Saturday. Against the Tribe, and tougher places you'd think to win baseball games than it is at the Rogers Center.
Interesting thoughts, though. We will talk to Kevin Barker about it, and you're right. Last year, the Blue Jays really struggled in the division, and so far this season, 7-5 in the division, and the only team they haven't played yet is the Boston Red Sox. So far, so good. They'll go for the sweep over the Baltimore Orioles tonight, 7:07 Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590 The Fan. So before we get to Kevin Barker, hockey last night, another wild night in the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. I mean, what stood out to you? We're going to do best win, worst loss coming up, but Ottawa stays alive. Winnipeg does not.
No, it wasn't what Game 3 even was, where, there was a lead. I mean, they've had a lead in all four games that they lost. They got the first goal out of the gate, and then that beautiful Emerson Edom goal to tie the game.
Unbelievable.
I mean, what a find. What a fantastic pick right at the bottom of the first round in 2010 by Anaheim to get Emerson Edom. But if you want to...
Maybe. It was a nice goal. I don't know where he is as a player yet.
No, but there's guys ahead of him. That draft I was looking at today, we're 5 years through. Guys should be 23 years old now, and it's sneaky good in retrospect. And there's some bottom 10 guys that are getting to be... I don't have it in front of me, but there are some bottom 10 guys that are getting to be a lot more reliable NHL players than they were. That's the Hall Sagan draft. With an okay top 10, but nonetheless, it's you're now at a point where you've got, I think 28 of the players have played at least 10 games in the NHL out of the first round, and that's ideally what you'd want. Edom went 29 overall, but Brock Nelson's there, Vizintin's there, Kuznetsov finally over here, Kevin Hayes got the overtime winner last night for the Rangers. Good players, Riley Sheen, good player, Jared Tenorti, good players in the bottom 10 is what I'm saying.
Here's my question when any first round series ends, and we might be having it tomorrow with this Calgary Vancouver series,
a
team wins and a team loses, and you want to give credit to the team that emerges, and I don't know how much in some of these series you give credit to one team and then the other team, it's you just say, hey, listen, they just weren't ready, they didn't play well, they weren't on that level, they didn't get saves. This Ottawa Senators series, I get the feeling that we're gonna be pretty complimentary to the Ottawa Senators whenever it ends, however it ends. I feel differently about this Vancouver-Calgary series. And in the sense of, hey, listen, I want to give credit to Calgary. I don't know whether to worry about Calgary going forward. Like, I know they're playing with house money, but they'll take on the Anaheim Ducks. To me, Vancouver's been the most disappointing team in the postseason in the sense of they just look overwhelmed. What did you think of the Winnipeg Jets? Like, are we looking at Anaheim and saying, hey, that's a beast of a team?
No, I'm not.
Are you looking at Winnipeg saying, hey, they just weren't
who'd
ready?
You pick in the series? I bizarrely picked Winnipeg to win in seven games.
Well, a lot of people did. Not alone. A lot of people did.
But again, was it the emotionality of the talk? And now the concept is, well, big stage, and a lot of the guys hadn't been there, and though they do have a couple ex-Blackhawks. Dustin Byfuglien's won a Stanley Cup. They've got guys that have played high level at a lot of... Brian Little's played World Juniors.
Certainly no one's been there in Winnipeg.
But we're also leading in every game. Like, if this was a team that was shut down, like it's a tennis score, like 6-1, 6-2, 4-0, 3-0, then I go, they were overmatched. That's where I'm worried the Canucks are headed. And I'm worried Vancouver goes meekly on home ice in game five. But no, I... yeah, I know where you're at with Calgary and Winnipeg. The thing is, big steps for Ottawa, big steps for Calgary, big steps for Winnipeg. Three of the Canadian teams, let's face it, they all surprised us by being playoff teams. All three of them, to me. Ottawa probably, because of the only of the conference they play in, and there are some good parts there, probably have the best chance to go back to the playoffs. It's still the West, and there are still teams. Are you telling me the LA Kings will miss next year? I don't think they will. The San Jose Sharks, are they going to miss next year if they don't blow things up? There's going to be, is Colorado really that far away? They were there last year as a one seed in their division. How far away are some of these teams? And we don't think Edmonton can put it all together in one year, but stranger things have happened. The Avs were a playoff team with Nathan MacKinnon, and Colorado was even a playoff team way back when in Matt Duchene's rookie year. Strange things can happen that way.
I would say this, and I totally agree with that, because even Edmonton, who's at the bottom of the West, right now they would tell you a change in front office, which might be coming in some respect. Peter Chiarelli interviewed there yesterday. Some roster moves, Connor McDavid, and the free agency lure of Connor McDavid, they would tell you right now that it changes everything. There's not one team in the West that would be honest with you right now, or that wouldn't be honest, and say, yeah, playoffs probably aren't in the plan.
Arizona's probably the team of any.
Yes.
And
okay,
I can't even believe I didn't mention the Dallas Stars.
There's
so you're
one.
Talking a core of the Bens, Sagan, Spezza.
Everyone thinks they're getting back in.
Absolutely.
In the East, Toronto knows they're not. Carolina knows they're not.
Buffalo probably isn't.
Buffalo knows
they're not. Florida may not.
Florida would say they are.
I'm not.
Because Florida was in it till the last week this year.
I don't see in Columbus what everybody else sees just yet.
But Columbus would tell you.
Oh, they have to market like they are.
Their
they
plans to get in.
They have to sell playoffs.
But they're not lying. That's what they want.
Is Philadelphia.
Yes, they want to get back in.
They want to get back in, but it's there could be a little bit of a slow decline for them. Not a steep decline, but a slow decline. They might even be a little worse than last year.
Maybe.
They had great goaltending this year. They really did.
Well,
and they were still bad.
They lost 19 times in the shootout or overtime.
Not helpful. But
right.
But neither was New Jersey. A lot of people said, oh, the Devils, they're fine. It's just the shootout. No, there's a lot more problems in New Jersey than that. So I guess when I look at it, and I want to bring up Pittsburgh, too, from last night, because seeing the overtime goal live, seeing Bob Cole call it in Pittsburgh, for the Pens and their expectations and where they've really been expecting greatness for it's almost a decade, right? This is Sidney Crosby's 10th year. It's been at least 7 or 8 years where probably anything shy of the conference finals is a disappointment in Pittsburgh. And the reaction of their fans, probably knowing that's the last time they've seen them, they're down 3-1. Maybe they'll get back for game 6, was just, yep, not surprised. That's how I felt. Like it's hard to read a crowd. You're not there. But I just felt like, and on Twitter, it was just like, that's who they are. We were so fortunate to get in. We are so, our blue line is so absolutely blitzed with injuries. And we're not getting much offensively from anybody. Sidney Crosby said one potent game out of four. Evgeny Malkin's had none.
They're scoring one goal a game.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh's going to be, and again, the body's not dead yet, let alone cold, but Pittsburgh's going to be a really interesting conversation. So tonight, as mentioned, the Toronto Blue Jays get the Baltimore Orioles going for the sweep. Kevin Barker going to join us right away. Drew Hutchison on the mound. Now, we were all impressed with his first start at Yankee Stadium. The last two, not so much. Really, it's been, the Blue Jays starting pitching's been inconsistent so far. The bullpen has actually been a strength, believe it or not, other than that one game at Yankee Stadium. And they're still 8-7. And again, we talked about it yesterday. You get to the end of May, and you're not, you know, you're hovering around 500. By all means, it's leaves you right in the thick of things.
Starter ERA and starter WHIP are two things, you know, they're more simplistic stats, but they're always easy to check. And yeah, I feel like I'm going there daily to see where they're at. And the Jays are a 4.97 starter ERA. It's better only than Baltimore, Seattle, or Boston. Now, all those teams have postseason aspirations. Also, those aren't. You know, teams just in it not to win it. Baltimore, Seattle, and Boston all have hopes to be there. Kevin Barker joins us in studio now. I heard you talking earlier with Jeff, and I heard you say, of course, hitting's never going to be an issue. No one's worried about a single veteran player, and if anything, the young guys, there's more promise in Pompey maybe even than there was 2 weeks ago, and Travis has looked the part from day one. He's looked like a major league second baseman, and he looks like he'll be that for a long time.
All of those things sound good. Basically, what you guys have said, throwing strikes, getting guys out early, getting deep in games and staying away from inexperience in a bullpen that we don't know what it is yet. You can say Osuna's, you know, he's very confident, throws a lot of strikes, comes after guys. Example, Chris Davis yesterday comes in pumping fastballs. If you're going to hit me, you're going to beat me. He's going to do it with my best pitch. That's what you want out of a bullpen, especially from young guys. You can give all the credit to me to Russell Martin. Russell Martin is putting the fingers down. Last night, if you watched that game, that's the best game I've seen him play as a Blue Jay. Obviously, he's not hitting where he wants to be, but when you're a 250 hitter, at the end of the year, you're going to be a 250 hitter. So I think it's more important for him to put the right fingers down and show confidence. You saw a lot of fist pumps. Here right. It is. Throw this. It's going to work. And then it works. It gives pitchers confidence. That's what you want. You want to be able to walk around the mound like you were supposed to be there.
This isn't a challenge.
We're seeing that.
This isn't a challenge for San Russell Martin, but their starters lead the major leagues in walks. Is there anything he can do differently to cut that down as a veteran catcher?
I don't think so. I think you need, you know, you talk about strikes, you talk about quality strikes. Big leagues, you got to stay away from more of the white part of the plate and pitch more of the black parts, meaning the outer surface of the plates. Can young guys do that? I think that you're going to see Russell Martin maybe setting up more middle than on the corners, especially with Aaron Sanchez. Ball moving 10, 12 inches. If I set up on a corner, it's obviously going to move out of the strike zone. I think the more Russell Martin sees these guys, the more he gets confidence. He has to have confidence in putting the right fingers down. Once he gets that, I think you're going to see this team throwing more strikes. That's what it's all about. You know, we always sit on this show and go, well, you have to throw more strikes. You have to go up and have a better approach to the plate. Obviously, they're trying to do these things. When they start doing it more consistently, you're going to see more wins deeper in games, and that's ultimately what you want to do. Yeah.
Well, let's be honest. R.A. Dickey historically doesn't walk a ton of guys. Drew Hutchison doesn't walk a ton of guys. So far this year, they are.
Mark Burley doesn't walk a ton of guys.
No.
You got to say R.A. Dickey's a different kind of guy because from one start to the other, who knows what the knuckleball is going to do. Yeah. You know, it's a field pitch. It depends on where he's pitching, whether it's indoor or outdoors. It's a lot of things goes on with that. So sort of throw R.A. Dickey in a pot by himself, and then there's everybody else.
I'll tell you what, though. So Aaron Sanchez walked seven guys last night, and at times he was wildly affected because he made big pitches at times to get out of jams because nobody knew where it was going, but he walked seven guys. In comes Ozuna, and I was at the game last night. There was, like you said, he comes in and he just starts pumping 94, 95, 96. It was just a feeling in the building. Like, it was a calm.
Sure.
Almost like he was a 10-year veteran closer where you knew they weren't going to touch him.
Well, the difference is, I'll give you an example, offensive side of the ball, Dalton Pompey before when he said that, you know, I'm a little scared, I'm not doing what I want to do. Demeanor was different walking around the plate when he swung at certain pitches, had that look on his face like he was a little lost. Last couple of days, you know, he's came out, demeanor's different. It's the same as a pitcher. If you have confidence around the mound, even if you're throwing balls, you can get guys out just the way you look, the way you attack guys. And you're seeing that from young guys, especially Osuna, Castro. You're seeing more from Brett Cecil because Brett Cecil's sort of that guy that's been thrown, you know, backed in the corner a little bit by John Gibbons and said, hey, you need to step it up here. I need you to pitch in big spots, and I need you to throw strikes. So, again, I think you're going to see the more the time these guys get comfortable, I think you're going to see more strikes being thrown.
Ozuna, for the record, now 9 2/3, I believe, this season, and ERA still at zero. So,
yeah, he's been fine. Do you look and say, can we ever overrate starting pitching? And I bring that up because there's been some real superstar staffs put together. It's hard in the playoffs, isn't it? Because teams end up making the playoffs and they don't get the results they want in the playoffs. But it's such a fine line pitching in the playoffs. We almost know, like I always say, you're okay to wager if you want to spend your own money on who's going to make the playoffs. Don't bet on playoff baseball games. Don't bet on playoff baseball series. The Braves, of course, the Braves had the best rotation from what are we talking, 1992 probably through 2001. They won World Series, but they got there every year.
That's why they did, because they pitch well, they play great defense, and they get a timely hit every once in a while. Why did the Blue Jays be any different? This is, I think they're starting in the right direction with Russell Martin. We talk about this all the time. You guys talk about it. We talk about it on our show. You talk about the guy putting the right fingers down. Every team needs a good quarterback. Right now, that's Russell Martin. He shows confidence in guys when they're coming out of pens, when they're starting. Sanchez chucking balls over guys' heads. He's like, hey, oh, it's okay. You still have a couple of pitches to work with. You can still get this guy out. That's what we're talking about by veteran leadership, doing the things off the field to get these guys to do it on the field. That's what you're seeing.
Like, I just bring it up because there's no logic to the Orioles winning 96 games with the staff they had, with Norris and Tillman and Gonzalez, and for a while, Jimenez, their big free agent bonus baby, Ubaldo Jimenez. And they didn't even want him starting after mid-May.
Chen had a career year last year.
And Chen had a career year. And Gossman was okay when he pitched. But on paper alone, Washington's struggling this year. Seattle's struggling this year. Like, all these teams, it's still so early, but all these teams, we look at, and we have great starting pitching. 1-4, 1-5 with Washington's case.
David Price's last two starts, it would be hard for you or I to get hit harder.
Yeah, absolutely.
I will say this. There's one thing you can do always in baseball. That's play defense and run the bases the right way. The one team last year that did that better than anybody in baseball was the Orioles.
Yeah.
So that's why everybody seems to forget that defense is very important in baseball. If you're not making errors and you're not giving up runs, which is the ultimate, part of the game, is you don't want to give runs away, especially on a team like the Blue Jays doesn't have any experience in certain situations. You want to catch the ball. The Orioles last year were one of those teams that did it better than everybody.
They were weird. Weeders missed almost the whole year. Machado missed half the season.
Yeah.
Who else was it? Somebody. Chris Davis was obviously
suspended.
So what
that says is teams that come to play them have to beat them. They're not going to beat themselves.
Yeah.
So have you changed your mind at all? I'll ask you this. Where are you at now with Aaron Sanchez? Gets through 5 1/3, ends up picking up the victory, but walk 7 guys. Are you in a hurry to move him to the bullpen? Do you think in the long run it might help the team and him? Or how many starts
I've always been a big fan of having Aaron Sanchez in the bullpen. I've made that clear from day one. I just think you can dominate the bullpen with one pitch. If you throw 99 with a 10-inch sink on the ball, that's a pretty hard pitch to not come out of the bullpen and throw. When you're a starter, guys, the difference is from last year and this year, they don't have to swing at that because they're going to see him more than once.
Right.
When he comes out of the bullpen, they're cheating, trying to get the head out because they know guy throws 99 to 100. You tend to swing at balls that are not strikes. This is why he had a better year. So I think you obviously have to give him at least another start. I know John Gibbons today said it's a step in the right direction. Whether that means you're going to get more than one more start, who knows? I think it's a trial and error kind of process where if you come out and have a good start next time, you're going to get another one. If you don't, then we're going to think about making changes.
So before you go, what parts of Baseball Central I missed where if you had a retrospective thought on the nothing happened last night. I heard you talk about that. But the Jose Bautista throw that has put him on the shelf, that he was just a little too wound up. I heard it described by somebody as just good, hard baseball, and you never know if the Orioles can come back from down 8 runs in the 8th inning, and I'm thinking, of course he'd want that back, and
yeah,
you would
I'm
tell him never
that.
To do that again.
I'm not buying that. This is why you love Jose Bautista. I know he did it, and it shouldn't have been done. He's obviously came out and said, yeah, it's not the smartest thing I've ever done.
But it's passion,
this
but
is
it's
why
not.
You love Jose Bautista. Every team needs a guy like this. Every team needs a leader that's going to go out and wear his heart on his shoulder. This guy does that. There's no question of how he plays the game and the passion he has.
I know that. But was that about him or was it about the Jays? That plays about him being pissed
Greg,
off.
Greg, let's be honest for a second.
I am.
We've done
totally
it before.
But that was
no,
a selfish
let's,
play.
Let's. Why? Think of what we're talking about here. He threw a baseball. It's throwing.
Right.
It's not the first time he's done it, too. Let's make sure
everybody knows that. You're not putting anything extra on to try and get a 9-3 force out of not exactly – like, Delmon Young's not Ricky Henderson. He's not Turtle either.
Yeah, but
he was never going to get
He was never getting him out.
We all agree on that.
He's not doing something you don't – like, he threw.
Baseball. Don't move the goalposts. He'd admit it wasn't a good play, and he'd admit he wouldn't do it again. And he's up 8 runs in the 8th inning.
I know, but it's a hot dog play. I know what the situation is, but when you really take a step back and think about it, what do? He threw – it's like Peyton Manning injuring his shoulder going for an add-on touchdown on a throw. He throws the football. It's what he does.
Not every analogy works as an analogy.
I think
why doesn't it? You're a quarterback, you throw a baseball. He's an outfielder, you throw the baseball.
Quarterbacks throw 40 passes a game. How often is an outfielder trying to throw a guy out at first base?
Okay, so what if he threw it to second base where he's supposed to throw it?
Again, move around.
No,
What if he slept in bed the wrong way after he threw it?
But I didn't say that. I'm saying what if he threw hard to second?
We're talking about the play, okay? You broke the tie and said he wouldn't do it again. It's not the best team thing to do.
I think we can say,
but the passion's admirable, and I agree with
that. It is. Whatever you think about Jose Bautista, I don't think they can get where they want to be without him.
No.
So until he gets back, gets in the flow of the game again, and starts hitting the way we all know Jose Bautista can hit, this team's not going to be where they want to be. So I think we should just sort of overlook what happened that night, just because
yeah.
That's the way it is. That's him. He's done it before. It's not the first time. Shouldn't be shocked about it. I'm not shocked. It's just the way it is. So happened. He hurt himself on that play.
Is it a hot dog move? Absolutely, it's a hot dog move. My point is, we don't coach our kids, say never throw to first because you might injure yourself. That's what.
Someone doing that in a college game is getting beamed high the next pitch.
If I was a manager of a big league team, I'd want him on my team.
Yeah,
I'll say that.
But if you were the manager of a team up down eight in the eighth inning, and someone tried to throw out a runner on a meaningless single to right field, you don't like that either.
I think I'd rather be more mad than about people throwing behind people's heads.
Totally, and absolutely. He's totally just. So I'm saying he was so wired up, he put passion ahead of logic.
I think we're all right. Let's put it that way. How's that?
Well, I know I'm right.
Thank you for coming in.
Yeah, thanks.
No problem. It's fun, guys.
Invoice accordingly.
Nice.
Drop them off.
It is Brady and Walker. We will take a look at the NHL Stanley Cup playoffs. Again, we'll do best win, worst loss, best player, worst player. It's best and worst. And should Greg Brady finally get verified on Twitter? Oh, that blue check mark, it beckons.
Only when Barker gets on Twitter. It's time, man. Come into the mid-90s. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.
That little speaker on your phone doesn't stand a chance. Subscribe to the Brady and Walker podcast at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan, on demand.
Brady and Walker. Good day, everyone. Four games tonight in the NHL. They're nicely staggered. The 2-7 o'clock starts tonight. We'll get to talking about those in a little bit. Two late games as well. And then, of course, a full weekend of action. NBA we'll get to also with a couple late affairs last night. I know you were wandering back from the Dome and you caught some overtime action. You caught Memphis demolishing their opponent, the Portland Trailblazers.
Yeah, I saw Kevin Hayes ended for the Rangers in overtime. Pittsburgh's going to be an interesting conversation. So the two goals I did not see live just because of where I was and channel flipping. So one was the goal that you could say you really knew that the Anaheim Ducks were going to punch their ticket to the second round when Emerson Edom scores that goal against the Jets to make it 1-1. And then later on, St. Louis just lays the boots to the Minnesota Wild last night, 6-1. And Vladimir Tarasenko scores the goal that was almost as good as his goal of the year candidate during the regular season. We might go through the whole playoffs, Greg, and these will be the two nicest goals of the postseason. Tarasenko kind of does his crazy fast breakaway and then one-handed move, and that Edom goal goes around Jacob Trouba and somehow sifts that back.
And Edom's more a one-man solo effort, and Tarasenko's goal had an unbelievable pass from Laterra up the middle. Like, I mean, he thread the needle through three Wild players. And then when Peter Forsberg made it 5-1.
Which one's nicer to you? Which one's harder to do?
I like the Edom goal. It's more, you're rushing blue line to blue line. You pick up the puck at your own blue line. You're within the other team's blue line about a second and a half. And then a really nice one-handed deke. But he didn't exactly have anybody draped all over him like Tarasenko did. And you'd say, I'm surprised because we've seen, you're never surprised by anything Tarasenko does. Like, he, in what, Andrew, 60 games of hockey, or just let's say all season, is now in the mode where all those guys you watched, when you were younger, you'd go, well, I'm not surprised they do it. Datsyuk would be a modern example of that, where you go, I'm not surprised by any goal Pavel Datsyuk makes, Peter Forsberg.
The Edom goal surprised.
Or Jaromir Jagr.
Like, we know Edom, came with first-round pedigree and scored in junior and scored a bit in the American League, but when a guy who's playing in your bottom six goes around Trouba and then tucks it top shelf in a playoff game, that carries an element of surprise.
So game five, tomorrow night, there's no two-day break. They're right back at it, back at the Bell Center in Montreal, right on CBC at 7 o'clock. Louis Jean is our friend from Montreal, Quebec, on TVN. He's kind enough to join us, spend a few minutes talking about advancing a look to game five and also the Sens staving off elimination last night. Louis, thanks for the time. We appreciate it.
It is my pleasure. Anytime.
Montreal was would have loved to have swept, loved to have had the time off, loved to have prepped for either Detroit or Tampa. I'm sure if you have tickets for Game 5, you're awfully excited because everyone loves to see a series clincher at home. Anything about last night's developments concern you from a Montreal perspective for generating offense, generating chances? They did have 28 shots, but very few on the power play. The power play was a little underwhelming last night.
Yeah, and that's I think a major understatement. The power play has been atrocious, really, since the beginning of the series, and that's just maybe an extension of what it's been all season long. Montreal's power play, despite the talent, the skill that they have, they've got a really good sniper in Max Pacioretty. For some reason, they've had a tough time getting things going all year long, and you sort of wondered, would they turn the switch on? Would maybe the postseason help their chances on the man advantage? Well, the answer has been no, because it's been actually even worse. And, you know, although maybe in game one and two, they were getting chances and they were at least getting momentum, they were getting good looks, they haven't at all recently in the last couple of games. And so I think that's definitely a major cause for concern right now for the Montreal Canadiens staff. I think that's one thing. And the other thing is that they've only had three of the nine goals that have come from the top two lines. They're so-called offensive lines. So Pacioretty scored once. Plekanec has scored once. Lars Eller has also scored, although he's not necessarily a top six guy.
Yeah.
They're not getting the production offensively from the guys that they would hope to get. Mind you, you know, the third and fourth liners were the ones that have contributed. But, you know, as this series gets a little tighter and a little nastier, they're going to need their go-to guys like the Max Pacioretty's, et cetera, to produce a bit more, I think.
Curious your take on the Ottawa Senators' goaltending situation. Not even maybe in this series, because it's obviously Craig Anderson's now until he loses a game, but even looking ahead till next year, Andrew Hammond had this remarkable run. Robin Lehner was always kind of viewed as the goalie of the future, and Craig Anderson is that veteran backstop that had his share of injuries. They have a big decision to make, a couple of big decisions on who goes and who stays. How do you see this transpiring?
That's a very good question. It's funny, when I was at the GM meetings a couple of weeks back, maybe a month ago, I asked a few GMs. I just had a conversation with some, and I was sort of asking them how they viewed the situation in Ottawa and how much interest there would be for one of the guys there. I was basically trying to just figure out who GMs or other teams would be curious or would want to go after. And I, you know, there's one GM in particular that basically said he felt that Hammond is the real deal, and really? Was very curious to see what they would do there. The way I look at it is this way: who's the best goalie of the three? To me, it's clear it's Anderson. Anderson is the most steady, the guy that has the most experience, and I think is the better of the three. Robin Lehner right now is a big question mark. Is he ever going to be a number one? I think a lot of people thought and felt, and maybe still feel, that he can be, but he's never been able to sort of take that, the bull by the horns, and prove that he can be that number one backstop, the guy you can rely on every single game. And then Andrew Hammond, his technique is all over the place. You sort of wonder, is this a guy who just caught, you know, fire all of a sudden, but he's never really going to be a guy that's going to establish himself? He's going to get a contract. He's going to get a one-way deal. I don't know how much money teams would throw at him or if the Senators are going to do that. But to me, moving forward, ideally, if you're the Ottawa Senators, I think you keep Anderson, you keep Hammond, and you try and trade a guy like Lehner. But how much interest would there be in a guy like Lehner? Would probably, I think, that if you're a team out there that you need a goalie, the one that you know is a bona fide number one. Yes, he's had injuries. Yes, he's had some issues, but you know that when he's on top of his game, he can be really good. And his contract, he doesn't have a no trade or anything like that. That's Craig Anderson. But that's a major gamble. If you feel you're a team like the Ottawa Senators and you're on the upswing, you feel that, you know, the youth is coming in and you're probably a team that's going to make the playoffs next year, and you can try and start making a push year after year after year, how comfortable are you with Lehner and Hammond? That's the big question.
It's so hard to evaluate young goalies. I get it. And the Hammond stuff, hey, good for Ottawa. It's been an amazing run. It's been an entertaining run, and he's captivated a city and a nation, all that. I don't buy it for a second. And it's not denigrating the guy. I just don't think he's this guy a year from now.
But here's the thing, though. If you're the general manager, you're thinking about the team. But look at what Hammond did and how he inspired the city the franchise, and the guys in that locker room. Man, they felt 10 feet tall when Hammond was in net. They felt there was no way they were going to lose. So I think you have to take that into account. I'm with you. I'm not convinced at all. I don't know that Hammond is ever going to be able to duplicate what he did. I mean, that would almost be impossible anyway. But I'm not sure that he's a guy that's ever going to push to be a number one. I haven't seen enough. And as I said, I mean, I work with Jose Theodore and Eric Fichaud and Patrick Lalime. I mean, those guys had pretty good careers in the NHL. And when I sit down with them and we look at tape and they show me different things that Hammond does on the ice, I'm just baffled by the fact that he's been as good and he won as many games as he did. Now, maybe working with a very good goalie coach every single day will be able to work some of the kinks that he clearly has in his game, but still he found a way to win. And so, yeah, as I said, I mean, if I'm an organization, how do you tell your season ticket holders that you're getting rid of the guy that got you in the playoffs?
Yeah.
That's a tough call to make.
That's a good-looking, attractive group, too. So you got Eric, Jose, right? I mean, that's a stylish – you're not hanging out with
flow.
Mike Ricci.
There's some serious flow. There.
Before you go, we got about a minute. So the Canadians basically rolled it with 5D last night. You know, Patterson played his 7 minutes, but we're not thinking he's going to play much more, and I'm sure Michelle Therrien's in agreement with us. What I mean, they don't have – any real other options. We've seen Pittsburgh just finally hit the wall with playing five guys upwards of 15, 16 minutes each and their best defenseman 27, 28 minutes. What can they do?
Well, what they need to do is they need to win in five to rest the guys, because there's a couple of horses they're going to lead on a lot. That's one. And two, they do have Gonchar, who won a Stanley Cup, and they have Mike Weaver, who was in that cup run last year when they went all the way to the conference finals. And so, I mean, there's depth there. There's experience for sure that they can lean on. And but I just think that if Patterson is all right after that hit he took last night, I still think they're going to lean on him a little bit. But they're going to go heavy on the Markovs and on the Subans. But the one thing that's interesting about that D pairing is that you know you can give Subban 30 minutes a night and he'll be good to go. But Markov is older. Markov is getting a little older, and the more he plays, the tighter it gets, sometimes he gets exposed a little bit. Mm. And so to me, that's interesting. That's why you want that rest. That's why they absolutely wanted to win four, and they definitely want to close it out tomorrow night, because they've got some older guys that they rely on heavily in the playoffs, Markov being one of them, perhaps the most important one. And so they need to make sure that they take care of guys like that.
Louis, thanks so much for this. Greatly appreciate it.
My pleasure, anytime.
Louis Jean from TVA. Yeah, Sergei Gonchar just one game in the last 6 weeks. He was initially injured on that David Clarkson hit back on March 12th. He's only played the one game and played 12 minutes.
It's a great point. Last night didn't feel like a huge game for Montreal. Game five the same way. But when you really look at where they want to be a month from now, it maybe is.
Well, and they're wanting Detroit and Tampa to go seven. That's very helpful for them if it does. Let's do best and worst from last night in sports.
Best.
Devin. Travis.
And worst.
Travis Snyder.
With Brady and Walker.
You got everybody jumping on him for his defensive miscues, and he's a sweet guy, and the media loves him.
Nice guy, bad series. It happens. All right, best and worst. Best player, worst player. Best win, worst loss from last night. I'll take worst player. I'll give it to Devin Dubnyk. He's been so good for Minnesota. And last night was, it just didn't go his way. Six goals and was pulled at the end of 40 as the Blues tie this series up. They were terrific last night, but not Dubnyk's best night. Six goals and 17 shots.
Best player, a lot of efficiency from Courtney Lee last night. The former Hilltopper from Western Kentucky. They have a great mascot. Courtney Lee was 8 of 11. Just turned the ball over, how about none times, and at 18 points. Memphis was pretty dominant. Everybody knew that Portland would be in a little bit of trouble with injuries and whatnot. Damian Lillard can't carry them. They've won the two at home so far, back to Portland, but Memphis up 2-0 the series, and they're playing complete team basketball. They always do in the playoffs.
Best win, give it to the Ottawa Senators. The fans deserve it. The team deserves it. They probably deserve more than one win in this series. They got one last night, so they get to go on the road for Game 5. Good for them.
Worst loss, Pittsburgh Penguins. Don't know if it's the end of this particular core. We know about their injuries, but they got to stave off elimination and win three straight, like the Rangers did to them last year. To go to the second round, it seems unlikely. Their fans certainly don't believe anymore. 2 o'clock on the way. A lot's coming up. It's Brady and Walker, Sportsnet 590, The Fan, Sportsnet 360.